Thank you, and good morning, everybody, and welcome to the presentation of Umicore's results for the first half of 2015. I will talk about the overall business evolution as well as the outlook for the full year, and then I will hand over to Filip, who will cover the financials. I will then wrap up before handing the call over to you for any questions that you might have. If we look first at the overview, we can see that revenues were well up compared to last year. The 12% increase in revenues primarily reflects strong volume growth in Catalysis and Energy and Surface Technologies, and I will go into more details about this growth in a moment. Our earnings have shown an even stronger improvement, with recurring EBIT up by 24%. The volume growth that drove the revenues in Catalysis and Energy and Surface Technologies has been the main contributor to the increase in EBIT, and clearly, the growth investments of the past few years are now generating revenues that are coming through in meaningful proportions to the bottom line. The currency exchange rate did also have a positive impact on the earnings, although this was much less significant than the volume effects. On balance, metal prices did not have much of an impact. The growth investments that we are currently undertaking are all progressing smoothly or even ahead of schedule. The 40% capacity expansion in Hoboken is making good progress, and we have successfully completed the investment there during the first of this year's two extended shutdowns. Looking ahead, demand remains solid, and I'm sufficiently confident in the performance of the business to say that we will generate a full-year recurring EBIT in the upper half of the range of 310 million-340 million euro that I gave back in April, and this under current conditions. Let's take a look at how we see things evolving in each of the business groups. In Catalysis, we expect strong demand levels and a supportive mix to continue, both for light and heavy-duty applications, although this will be offset to some degree from an earnings point of view by higher depreciation charges and startup costs as new capacity comes on stream in Europe. In Energy and Surface Technologies, demand for cathode materials should stay strong, while startup costs and depreciation charges will increase as we commission more new capacity. Some seasonality effects should be expected in the other businesses within that segment, which means that the first half figures should not be simply extrapolated. In Recycling, supply conditions remain supportive or very supportive, and we expect the increased throughput rate after the current investment wave in Hoboken to compensate for the lost production days. Let's now turn to the business review and comment on the evolution of the three business groups in the first half of this year. Catalysis was the business where we saw the most spectacular improvement in performance, with revenues up by 18% and recurring EBIT up by 48%. Overall, this was driven by a positive volume and mix evolution and the ramp-up of our heavy-duty diesel business. If we look first at the light-duty business, our revenues grew faster than car production levels globally as well as in all regional markets. In Europe, the growth was mainly driven by the introduction of Euro 6b compliant platforms and a favorable product mix resulting from the particular platforms where our catalysts are present. In China, while the growth of the automotive market has started to decelerate, our revenues have increased quite considerably. This is in part due to our platform mix, which is influenced by a strong presence with international car producers. In North America, we also saw a positive volume and mix effect. On the heavy-duty side of the business, we see the technology and infrastructure investments of the past years really starting to pay off as the production levels ramp up both in Europe and in China. The Precious Metals Chemistry business unit also showed some good revenue and earnings growth due to higher demand for precursors used in a number of catalytic applications. Looking briefly at the investment that we have underway in automotive catalysts, we have received such strong demand for Euro 6 related products in Europe that we will need additional capacity in the region, and we are therefore accelerating the completion and commissioning of our new production facility in Poland. The Technology Development Center in Korea will be operational later this year, and the plant in Thailand, which is at an earlier stage of development, is scheduled to be operational in the second half of next year. Let's now look at the evolution in energy and surface technologies. The growth profile looks very similar to catalysis, with revenues up by 24% and recurring EBIT up by 46%. Although some of this can be attributed to the recent acquisitions made in cobalt and specialty materials, the vast majority of the growth comes from underlying volume growth. In rechargeable battery materials, the volume progression has been very strong, with demand for high-density cathode materials for high and portable electronics continuing to grow. On the automotive front, the demand for our NMC materials increased too, as the number of electrified car models continues to rise, and demand for NMCs used in e-bus applications is providing additional traction. This has been a particular trend in China, where we are well positioned to serve customers from our production facility in Jiangmen. The other business units all recorded solid volume growth. It is perhaps worth pointing out the significant improvements in the performance of the electro-optic materials and thin film products activities. These business units have faced significant market challenges in recent years, and it is highly satisfying to see these positive developments. They can be partly attributed to cost discipline, a more focused product offering, and production footprint in each unit. You can see the investment picture in energy and surface technologies here. I would like to single out the capacity or the continuing capacity expansions in rechargeable battery materials in South Korea and in China. The demand levels are currently growing so fast that we are bringing the commissioning of the new lines forward, and we are already looking at further investments to keep pace with our customers' requirements. In recycling, we recorded stable revenues and a 6% increase in recurring EBIT. In precious metals refining, the revenues were stable. Although we processed lower volumes at the Hoboken facility, this was offset by an improvement in the supply mix, both for industrial byproducts and end-of-life materials, with higher grade and more complex materials being treated. This mix effect also had a positive impact on earnings. It is worth adding that the overall metal price impact was not material. Indeed, the average received price for precious metals was higher year on year, while prices for most specialty metals continued to decline, particularly selenium and tellurium prices. The 40% capacity expansion in Hoboken is progressing well. We successfully completed major investments during the second quarter, and the next investment wave should be completed by the end of the summer. From a volume perspective, the plant should be able to make up for these longer than usual shutdowns, and we expect overall volumes for the full year of processed materials to be largely similar to those in 2014. Additional investments in certain auxiliary services are planned for 2016 and are expected to be carried out without any prolonged stoppages of operations. In the jewelry and industrial metals and in platinum engineered materials activities, we recorded stable revenue, while revenues were higher in precious metals management due to some more favorable conditions on the precious metals markets. The only business that did less well than last year was technical materials, where we faced some market challenges. I have already commented on the progress of the Hoboken investment in jewelry and industrial metals. The investment in the silver refining capacity expansion in Thailand is proceeding according to plan. Looking at the corporate items now, overall costs were down a few percent compared to last year. This has been driven by continued cost discipline in the corporate functions and a somewhat lower level of R&D spend at group level as a number of key projects move into the delivery phase. We have chosen to report our minority stake in Element Six Abrasives in the corporate segment, as it is managed as a financial investment with operating control in the hands of our JV partner. The contribution from this minority stake was significantly lower this year due to a contraction in one of its main end markets, although some of this impact was offset by cost control measures and targeted restructuring efforts. You will also recall that we have decided to find an alternative future for our zinc businesses outside Umicore. Under accounting norms, we therefore report these activities in a separate segment. There is actually nothing really new to add on the establishment itself of separate legal entities to prepare us for an eventual sale, and our ambition remains to divest these activities by the end of next year, market circumstances permitting. In terms of business evolution, it was one of contrasts. The building products business unit recorded lower sales volumes as a result of continued weakness in the European construction market, and premium also remained under pressure. Zinc chemicals, on the other hand, saw a strong increase in revenues and earnings driven by higher volumes and margins. Although we intend to divest these activities, we remain committed to ensure they are as competitive as possible and best positioned for the future. We have a number of investments underway in zinc chemicals in particular, and that is the largest project there is the construction in China of a new and state-of-the-art plant for zinc powders, which is nearing completion. And actually, this project comes timely as the demand for our products keeps growing. The total number of people employed by Umicore remained stable during the period, with some increases in the catalysis and energy and surface technology businesses, largely offset by some reductions elsewhere. On the safety front, the developments were not as good as we expect, with a higher number of accidents. The only bright spot, if I may call it so, is that the overall severity rates of these accidents has been lower than in previous years. And with that, I will now pass the call over to Philippe, who will comment on the financial aspects.
Thank you, Marc, and good morning, everybody. Now, before we review the financials, you will have noted that our financial statements at the back of the press release have undergone some changes as a result of the new segmentation, and in particular the decision to report our two zinc units as discontinued operations in accordance with IFRS 5. As a result, our consolidated financial statements now show the zinc units grouped as a single line item on the P&L, the balance sheet, and the cash flow table. I kindly refer to the extended notes to our financial statements for more details on this change, and in particular to note number 10. For the avoidance of doubt, the key group figures presented on the first pages of our press release do obviously still include the zinc units, and this for ease of reference. Moving now to the numbers, the increase of our recurring EBIT by 24% compared to the growth in revenues of 12% illustrates the leverage effect created by strong demand and the ramp-up of new installations on our operational efficiency and profitability, and this particularly in catalysis and energy and surface technologies. The appreciation of the US dollar and its pegged currencies versus the euro acted only as a secondary driver to our revenues and earnings. As we mentioned in the first quarter call, we have seen a time lag effect when it comes to the currency impact as we make good on contracts secured at the end of last year. Recurring EBITDA increased by 39 million euros year on year, which beats the recurring EBIT growth of 33 million, as D&A charges were up 6 million following past investments. We expect a somewhat higher D&A charge in the second half of this year compared to the 89 million incurred in the first half as new plants and production lines are commissioned. Our return on capital employed recovered quite sharply from last year's low and now amounts to 14.4% over the first 6 months. The tax charge evolved broadly in line with the underlying profitability, resulting in an effective recurring tax rate of 23.8%. Recurring net profit grew faster than recurring EBIT, driven mainly by positive forex effects on received dividends, corresponding to a recurring earnings per share of €1.20 for the first 6 months. As in previous periods, our businesses continue to generate strong cash flows that fund growth investments. Operating cash flow before changes in working capital increased by close to 40% year on year. The difference with previous periods is that business expansion has reversed the working capital trend with a €78 million increase in working capital over the first 6 months of this year. This increase was tempered by a release of working capital needs in the discontinued operation in the zinc units. With the many expansion projects firmly underway, and in some cases even accelerated, we currently still expect to spend approximately €280 million on CapEx over the full year, of which we already spent €100 million in the first 6 months. The waterfall chart on the next slide shows a close to stable net financial debt, moving from €298 million at the end of December of last year to €314 million at the end of June. This includes the payout of the dividend in May and a cash tax charge which increased proportionally to the underlying results. As a consequence, our solvency ratio has hardly moved, and it reflects a solid capital structure and the fact that our expansion has had no meaningful impact on our funding capacity. Our average weighted net interest rate over the period equally was stable at about 1.5%. Finally, non-recurring items had a negative impact of €30 million on EBIT. Half of this is restructuring related, with cost reduction measures in technical materials being the most significant factor. Impairments of permanently tied up metal inventories, reflecting the price decline in a number of metals, had a negative impact of €6 million. The other category covers a number of one-off effects, such as, for example, some expenses linked to the closure of our zinc oxide production facility in India. More than half of the €30 million of non-recurring items is non-cash in nature. With that, I hand it back to you, Mark.
Thank you, Philippe. I would now like to wrap up the key messages from today's results. We had a strong first half with earnings and revenues growing well across businesses. In line with the indications that I gave you last year, much of this growth has been driven by increased volumes and particularly from investments that we have made as a platform for long-term growth. In addition to this, we have seen a positive mix evolution in several businesses. I'm confident in the prospects for the full year, and if current conditions persist, recurring EBIT for the full year 2015 should be in the upper half of the range that we provided back in April. In terms of growth investments, all of our projects are moving ahead as planned, with the Hoboken facility having successfully completed a first wave of investments in recent weeks, and further capacity increases in automotive catalysts and rechargeable battery materials even having to be accelerated due to the strength of customer demand. Before I hand the call over to questions, I would like to draw your attention to the Capital Markets Day that we will be hosting in London on the 2nd of September. This event will provide a platform for us to outline our strategic ambitions beyond Vision 2015. we'll be providing insights into the overall ambitions for Umicore to 2020, some insights into our key growth project, as well as a chance to interact with our management team. We'll obviously be delighted to see as many of you there as possible, so please contact our investor relations team for further details if you have not already done so. And with this, I would like now to open the call for questions.
Thank you much, Mr. Greenberg. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please also ensure that your mute function is switched off while you're signaling to reach your equipment. Our first question today is coming from Mutlu Gundogan of ABN AMRO. Please go ahead, sir. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning, everyone. I've got two questions on metal prices and two questions on catalysis. So the first question is that metal prices have come down significantly since the Q1 results. How does that change your outlook for 2016? Do you still expect earnings growth in recycling, assuming current spot rates? The second question is on the sourcing availability of metal prices. We've seen some capacity curtailments on the metals and mining side. So how does that look for 2016 and beyond? The third question is on the automotive industry. We've seen various OEMs bring down their full-year forecast. How does that feed into your orders? I see you make some comments on China. Perhaps some more color on that. And then finally on HDD, you have disclosed very little about this business in terms of financial performance. Can you at least share with us where we stand in terms of profitability? Is it profitable, and how do margins compare to the LDV business, and how dilutive are the returns to the catalyst segment? Thanks.
Good morning, Mutlu. So let me start to address your questions. So first of all, indeed, yeah, metal prices have come down significantly since the first quarter update. And let me first deal with the shorter term considerations. This is, of course, factored in the forecasts that we have provided today, that we have updated today. And that's why also we have, I would say, made it clear that the forecast was given under current conditions. So indeed, factoring in the metal price decline. Now, you will recall that quite some of the precious metal exposure or the hedgeable metal exposure had been hedged for 2015, so there isn't much of an impact there. And most of the impact that we see short-term is related to the decline in secondary metal prices or those metals that cannot be hedged. For 2016, I think it's a bit early to tell because at this stage it's speculation. We don't know where metal prices and currency exchange rates are going. I think it's important to look at both elements. But I would say if we were to single out these two factors, I mean metal prices overall and currency exchange rates, to single them out from all other moving parts, I would say that compared to today, the figures for 2016 would roughly be impacted by some 20 million euro. And that is, I would say, a net impact of the metal and currency effects, and taking into account that a small portion of the precious metal price exposure was hedged into 2016, which means that indeed a pretty significant chunk of the impact that I have estimated, I've indicated, is related to non-hedgeable metals. In terms of availability of metals in the short, medium term, it is actually very supportive, which has also being one of the underlying reasons for the mix improvement and the margin improvement in the recycling business. And the outlook that we have today remains very positive and very supportive of the capacity expansion that we are undertaking as we speak. So the availability of complex materials remains very good, and the curtailment that you have alluded to do not seem to impact the high end of the market, of the supply segment that we are targeting and addressing mostly. In the catalyst business, and I'm moving to your third question, the order book, as you will recall from previous discussions, the order book that we have gives us approximately a 3 months visibility in the catalyst market. That's about the, I would say, the horizon that we have for call-offs. And beyond 3 months, we work with the production forecast of our automotive customers. The order book and the call-offs are strong for the coming 3 months. So we have indeed good indications that the trends that were observed in the first part of the year in terms of volume and mix will continue to support the business in the second part of the year. And indeed, we have seen a certain deceleration of, or we are seeing or expecting more than seeing actually a certain deceleration of demand, because it's not yet truly visible in the call-offs in China. So that's based on the forecast for car manufacturers, and that's also factored in the forecast range that I've provided today. For HDD, and that's your last question, I will not go into more detail. We are not disclosing the profitability of sub-segments within our businesses, and we will not make an exception for HDD there.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Suffice to say that we're happy with the quality of the ramp-up and the pace of the ramp-up of our HDD business, indeed.
I can imagine. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, sir. We'll now go to Mr. Peter Olofsson of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, gentlemen. Follow-up question on the catalysis business. As in the U.S., the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Transport are working on new legislation for heavy-duty. So I was wondering whether this may be an opportunity for Umicore to enter the U.S. Market. And then on rechargeable battery materials, could you provide the revenue split between portable electronics and automotive, and maybe shed some light on the competitive environment and on pricing?
Hi, Peter. Let me start with the U.S. HDD market. In theory, any change in legislation can provide an opportunity for us to bid for business, of course, on condition that the change in legislation is, I would say, sufficient enough to warrant a redevelopment or a redesign of the engine configuration and the exhaust configuration for that engine. So it's a bit of a theoretical response, and the focus that we have today is first of all on continuing the ramp up of the existing business. And this being said, we continue to watch every opportunity indeed to improve our position in heavy duty, as we would do in any other business, by the way. Regarding the rechargeable battery materials business, I'm not going to provide you a detailed split of revenues. Suffice to say at this stage that the vast majority of volumes comes from the portable segment still today. This being said, the growth from and the pickup from the automotive demand is somewhat faster than the growth we see in portable applications. So you should expect a continued shift in proportions going forward, with a higher proportion of automotive demand going forward. Prices, this remains a competitive segment like all the segments in which we operate, and so price continues to be an element of the positioning, the market positioning, and the offering. It is, of course, important for us to reach scale effects soon enough so that volumes can help to make up for any price impact that we may have in that segment. But that's, I would say, the reality in most of the business where we operate. It's not specific to rechargeable battery materials.
Okay, but because the reason for asking is that we have seen that globally the smartphone market has been losing momentum, but that has not caused the situation in battery materials to change dramatically.
Does that answer your question, Mr. Olufsen?
Sorry?
Does this answer your question, sir?
Yeah, I think that this was the last.
Okay.
Mark was a statement more than a question. So.
Okay, very sorry. Thank you much, sir. We'll now go to Tony Jones of Redburn. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Mark, Filip. I've got a couple of questions on Catalysis and then one on cash flow. Can you quantify, even roughly, what the extra depreciation and ramp-up costs might be in the second half and whether they'll continue into 2016? On the HDD supply, the need for the new capacity, that suggests that this might be continuing. So could you confirm whether you're taking market share? And then on the cash flow for Filip, you've explained the impact of the change in mix having a negative impact on working capital. But with new assets coming online over the second half, further expansion, will we see this drag continuing into second half and maybe early next year? Thanks.
Should I maybe take the D&A, the last one?
Yeah. Before you address these questions, I would like to clarify that the new capacity that is coming on stream in Europe is mostly for light-duty applications.
Okay.
So, Tony, on the D&A, so we do expect a higher D&A indeed in the second half than in the first half, but nothing, I would say, major. But so if you take the 89 of the first half, you double that, then you add something that we just want to highlight that will be part of the seasonality as it has been over the last periods, because indeed, to take the second part of your question, we expect that to continue into next year as we continue, obviously, to invest and as the investments that, for example, we make this year will have an impact on the D&A charges next year. But so nothing really major, but we just want to highlight that that is indeed a trend that will continue, and that plays a role in the seasonality for Catalysis and also in part for Energy and Surface Technologies. On the cash flows, indeed, we've seen, which I think is normal with the substantial pickup in volume and in business, we've seen an increase in working capital. Remember that over the last 2 years, we released about 150 million in total of working capital. So, and you also see that with other companies. So that's in line, I would say, with the underlying business growth. It has been concentrated, I believe, in the first half indeed. So I do expect that in the second half we should see a much more stable working capital profile, at least nothing fundamental. And the new expansions obviously will have an impact, but again, I do expect when you look at the working capital needs for the full year that we should not be fundamentally different than what we have had at half year.
Yeah, if I may add, Philip and Tony, you should also bear in mind that metal prices have an impact on our working capital requirements quite quickly through the receivables. And so with the recent decline in metal prices may also influence the working capital requirements in the second half of the year.
Okay, great. Can I ask just one quick follow-up? Just on light-duty catalysis in Europe, is there any sign at all, either in what you just reported or your order book for the next 3 months, of any mix change? Because there's a lot of debate about this move away from diesel, so perhaps you could shed some light on that. Thank you.
No, indeed, that's a debate that continues and that we discussed on prior occasions as well, as you will undoubtedly recall. And the answer to your question is no, we don't see any change in the mix in the order book today.
Thanks, Mark. That's great.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. We'll now go to Evgenia Molotova of Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks a lot for taking my questions. I actually had one question on the new capacity on the smelter. If you could clarify, when you were saying that the return capital employed of the new capacity will be lower than that of the existing one, I understand that a lot of that is due to simply depreciation, higher depreciation, so higher capital employed. But can you explain metallurgically what is changing when you are adding new capacity, and what will be the return, the total return of the 500 kilotons that you are going to have? And the second question is on energy materials and cathode materials for electronics. Siltronic had results today, and they said that there is some slowdown in PCs and tablets, etc. So they're expecting their sales to go down in H2. So do you see any slowdown in demand for cathode and electronics?
Okay, let me start with the second question about the demand for electronics. No, we don't see signs of a slowdown because, first of all, we're not so much exposed to portable computers anymore. As we have explained in the past, there has been a gradual shift of our product mix towards higher-end products like tablets and smartphones. And it is fair to say that today the smartphone demand is one of the key drivers in there. Plus, also the continued introduction of new models and new functionalities that demand higher energy density, like 4G connectivity, etc., larger screen sizes, etc., is also a driver to the demand in that business. And so we don't see much impact of the PC or tablet slowdown that you allude to. Although it is also fair to recognize that the demand patterns are not linear in that business and are somewhat influenced by the introduction of new models. But the key message from this half year's release regarding rechargeable battery materials, however, is the fact that automotive demand is starting to pick up very nicely and come in meaningful numbers for us.
Yes.
Let me now move to your first question, Evgenia, about
I'm not sure if I formulated it right. I was just trying to understand the overall return of the new capacity.
Yeah, no, let me turn to your first question about the return on the new capacity. You're right, as we have indicated in the past, the return on the new capacity is not expected to be as high as the overall return, the average return that we achieve on the existing business configuration. This being said, the return, and that's what justified the project to a large extent, the return that we will achieve on this new investment is well above the cost of capital and therefore will be value creating. And why is the return different than the average return that we have achieved so far? Is because the mix in volumes that we process today with 350,000 tons of capacity cannot be arithmetically extrapolated to 500,000 tons of capacity. So the quality of the mix remains more or less the same, but in a way the proportions may change somewhat because of the much larger volumes that we will process. Not all the segments, not all the supply segments are growing at the same speed, in other words. And you may recall from previous conversations that actually the main target segment of our expansion efforts in recycling is the industrial byproducts, the complex industrial byproducts. So the proportions will likely change somewhat, and that explains indeed the lower returns.
Thank you.
I insist the project will be highly value creating with returns well above the cost of capital.
Yes, of course, I understand that it will be much higher than the group average return, yeah.
And much higher than the group average return, indeed.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moldova. We'll now go to Wim Hoste of KBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I have three questions, please. First, on the guidance, the upgrade or the narrowing up of the guidance range, can you explain what the key drivers behind that are? Is it faster than expected growth in catalysis and energy materials? Is it maybe a faster or better completion of the expansion projects in recycling or a combination of that? That's the first question. Then on recycling, a question about the availability of the capacity expansions into next year. I read from your press release that there will be some additional investments in auxiliary services in 2016 without major stoppage of operations. Does that mean that we should expect the 40% capacity expansion to be relatively rapidly available in early 2016? And then last question on rechargeable battery materials. Is there any update of the court case against BASF or any view on a potential settlement or that or anything like that? Thank you.
Good morning, Wim. So let me first address your question regarding the guidance. The main driver behind the upgrade or narrowing down of the guidance range is indeed the strong underlying demand in catalysis and energy and surface technologies, while the assumptions for recycling have not changed compared to those that we have used when we issued the initial guidance back at the end of April, with the exception, however, of the secondary metal price effect that I alluded to earlier, where we have now factored in the forecast a lower contribution from these secondary metals in the second half of the year. In terms of availability of the capacity for next year, I should be in a position to be somewhat more precise at the time of the Q3 update at the end of October, because then the second phase of investment, which is currently being carried out, will be behind us, and we will have a pretty good view on how the facility has restarted and what the exact throughput rate is after these major investments. This being said, at this stage, I would only repeat what we said earlier, which is still the base assumption and the base plan, is that it will take 1 to 1.5 years to gradually ramp up the capacity after the investments have been the major investments have been completed in the second part of this year, indeed. And the comment about the fact that we will carry out some additional investments in auxiliary services in the course of next year was meant to say two things. One is that the investment program doesn't stop. It's not because we have had a major wave of investments starting at the end of 2014 and going through the end of this year that investments are stopped in Hoboken. There is continued investment. We're returning to more normalized levels of investment, but with a continued focus on process and throughput improvements, more efficiency, etc. And the second message that we wanted to give was indeed that these investments would be carried out without prolonged stoppages, meaning that unlike what we have this year, we would return to a, I would say, a pattern of normal maintenance shutdowns as early as in 2016. As far as the rechargeable battery materials court case is concerned, there is nothing really particular to report, and the case is ongoing. And because it is ongoing, you will, of course, understand that I cannot go into the substance of the case. I can only repeat our view and our position that we believe that the allegations made by BASF and Argan do lack merit, and we are defending ourselves vigorously, and we are defending our position and our technologies vigorously, and defending the position that we are not infringing on any of the patents that are owned or used by BASF or Argan. And it remains a little bit of speculation of why BASF and Argan have launched such a, an aggressive approach, and I think that industry observers will understand that and will see, and that Umicore has been relatively more successful in positioning its technologies and products in the marketplace than some of its key competitors. And so I cannot totally rule out that there may be some commercial tactics behind this aggressive attack on Umicore. But that's all I can say at this stage. There is nothing else to report. The case is ongoing, and we expect more clarity on the proceedings before the International Trade Commission towards the middle of next year.
Okay, very clear. Thank you.
Thank you much, sir. We'll now go to Mr. Adam Collins of Liberum. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, everybody. I have four questions, please. So first of all, Mark, could you give us an update on how your discussions with customers are going in terms of filling the additional 2016 capacity in recycling? The second one is, and third is on EM. You mentioned that we shouldn't extrapolate from the first half to the second, double the EM number because of seasonality. Could you just explain what the seasonality issues are across surface chems and EM for us again? The third one on EM is on the energy storage side. The statement talks about progress in EM. I know that's a sort of progress in EM on energy storage. I know that's a relatively small area relative to consumer and automotive, but what's your outlook for energy storage? Is that going to become a sort of meaningful growth driver, do you think, for the business looking forward? And then finally, on the zinc divestment, we're seeing challenging trading conditions, and of course there's the French competition review. To what extent is that proving an issue in terms of your discussions with potential buyers of that business? Thanks very much.
Good morning, Adam. So let me first talk about the capacity, filling the capacity in recycling. The commercial efforts are progressing very well in securing additional supplies so that we can gradually grow the business and use the capacity that will gradually come on stream in the course of the next few months and years. So we're making progress as we had anticipated, and so it's we're fully in line with our expectations in that respect. And I would say that the supply conditions remain very favorable, and both in terms of quantities, mix, and commercial conditions as we look at the 2016 supply book. In terms of energy and surface technologies, the seasonality comes from a number of activities, and in particular in the cobalt and specialty materials activities, you have in the chemicals part of the business, in the tool materials part of the business, where you still have quite a significant European exposure. You have indeed quite a bit of seasonality with lower demand in the summer month and a shorter sales month in December. So that's something that has to be borne in mind. Nothing out of the ordinary. This is, we just wanted to repeat that and that the figures shouldn't be simply multiplied by two. Energy storage is an attractive and promising business segment within the battery materials space. This being said, this is a longer term, I would say, opportunity. We see it as a longer term opportunity than automotive or e-bus or portable electronics. And while this is on the agenda and is part of the business portfolio already, and we're delivering materials for such applications, it is not big in volumes for us today relative to either the portable electronics or the automotive demand at this point in time. But it is a promising third segment of demand that will require some of our attention in the future. And let me finish with the building products situation and the French competition. You may recall that we have indicated that the because we cannot do everything at the same time anyways, that in terms of sequence, we are working on a divestment of the zinc chemicals activities first, and then we'll work on the divestment of the building product activity, although from a technical point of view, the carve-out from the existing legal entities is being done simultaneously, but the sale process is not going to run in parallel, rather in sequence with zinc chemicals coming first. This to say that we hope and that by the time that the building products business is ready to be proposed for offered for sale, that the competition case may be closed. We'll see how things go. We don't have a I would say a clear and firm timeline for the hearings and the next steps in the process in the competition case, but that's the hope that I can express at this point in time. So I hope it will indeed not interfere.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. We'll now move to Mr. Andrew Benson of Citi. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thanks very much. Not surprisingly, most of the questions I had were have been answered. Just a couple of minor ones. The difference in working capital between the presentation and the slideshow, that's just to do with the consolidation. What one consolidates the activities to be sold, the other one is the sort of the core business. Just want to qualify that. You've taken some impairments on metal pricing as exceptional. I'd have thought that's ongoing business, but presumably then, does it mean that if metal prices are volatile in the future, you will have, if you like, exceptional charges? And lastly, can you just put a bit of detail on the growth in the automotive side for battery materials and just try and dimensionalize what you're seeing in terms of growth and scope and outlook for the next couple of years?
Yep. On the working capital, I can confirm that it's indeed the difference between, on the one hand, what is now called the continuing operations, so everything but the zinc units, and then on the other hand, the discontinued operations, which are the zinc units, and they had a diverging evolution in working capital, and so that's why we focus on the net which was the 78 million increase in working capital for the full group, including the zinc units. The impairment on NCI is something that it's on permanently tied up inventory, so indeed that moves along with metal price fluctuation. This is a non-cash impact, and indeed if metal prices increase, then you would see reversal, and we have for everything which is non-recurring, I would say, a pretty strict definition of what we consider as non-recurring and in what category it goes, and this typically is something that we've always put in non-recurring items because it's non-cash and it's really a one-off and it doesn't really influence the operational performance of the business or of the units.
Okay, and let me then answer your other question regarding the growth of battery materials demand from the automotive segment. We expect the market to demand to grow very significantly in the next few years, as we have also indicated in the past. So the demand should grow at double-digit figures and actually relatively fast going forward. And we believe that we are well-positioned both from a technology and a qualification, platform qualification point of view in order to capture a decent share of that rapid growth in the market. I would like to point out one element that was also mentioned in the press release or the press release, yes, that there is demand for fairly large-scale applications that is also coming up nicely, that is picking up nicely, that is e-buses. There are a number of cities around the world that have decided to introduce or to replace their bus fleets by electrified buses, and this is providing nice additional traction to the demand from the automotive segment. So I can only confirm that the assumptions that we have made in the past and that have actually supported our case for investing significantly in the rechargeable battery materials opportunity are confirmed or more than confirmed, and that rapid growth is expected in that segment in the next few years.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. Ladies and gentlemen, if you find your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Now we'll go to Mr. Massimo Bonisoli of Equita. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning, Mark and Philip. Just a few clarification left. One is on hedging. Most of the hedging activity was made in January, if I remember correctly, and you already mentioned the impact of metal price decline on recycling. But how much of your metal portfolio is currently hedged in 2015 and especially in 2016? The other two are for Philip. One is on tax rate, which is slightly up year on year in first half. An indication for full 2015 would be appreciated, as well as CapEx, if you have an indication for the second half, especially for what's left from the expansion of Hoboken.
Okay. First question on the hedging. So indeed, as we mentioned at the beginning of the year, we entered into hedging mostly, so it's precious metals, mostly 2015, some in 2016, as also Mark mentioned. For this year, what is hedged, obviously, the large majority is hedged because we progressed in the year. As you know, we don't quantify the impact, but I think Mark has given you a bit of insight as to the view we have today on metal prices and forex potential impact based on today's prices. Then on the tax rate, indeed, we have, I would say, a relatively small increase in the recurring tax rate. Overall, I would say that when you look at the tax whether it's cash charges or P&L charge, it basically evolves roughly in line with the underlying profit. There's obviously an impact of geographic profit mix that plays. You know, been hiding toward guiding towards a gradually increasing tax rate. So I would say that's in line with the guidance, but nothing dramatic. So really a gradual move for the full year. My expectation would that we'd be close to what we've had in the first half of the year on the CapEx. So we spent about 100 million in the first half, and the guidance remains that of the beginning of the year, which is for the full year, we expect to spend about 280 million of CapEx. So it means that I would say the majority of that amount will come in the second half of the year because of the major projects underway.
Thank you very much.
Thank you much, sir. We'll now go back to Mr. Mutlu Gundogan of ABN AMRO, who has a follow-up question. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Coming back to CapEx, it seems that you're bringing forward certain projects. So how should we think about CapEx next year? I think you were previously talking about a level of 200-220. Is that number higher now? And the second question is on currencies. What has been the impact of the positive effects on REBIT? I understand that it's not as big as volumes, but can you provide at least some numbers or some comments on that? And then explain again why we see a lag. Why has the benefit not been as high as one would expect given the positive environment? And then finally on guidance, why do you expect a lower REBIT in the second half compared to the first half? I understand that D&A charges are higher and seasonality, but there are also a lot of positive elements that should help in the second half versus the first half. So why are you more cautious? Is it solely on the drop in metal price, or is there more?
On the CapEx, I don't think we've provided specific guidance already for 2016. Clearly, what we've said is this year is a high year in terms of CapEx because you have the investments in Hoboken and the new plants in different units, for example, in automotive catalyst. So I think it's too early to give very specific or more specific numbers for 2016 on CapEx. Suffice to say that this year was indeed a high year of CapEx because of the number of projects coinciding. On currencies, we're not going to quantify it. Suffice to say that by and far, the major impact of the recurring EBIT is demand, is the effect of ramp-ups, is cost efficiencies, and that currencies only played a much limited role. You have the guidance that we typically give you for the currency exposure, the $0.01 to $1. And I would like to say that there it's important that you take indeed into account this lag effect. And the lag effect basically comes from the fact that when you enter into contracts, let's say the end of last year, at terms which were obviously significantly different in terms of currencies than what we have today, we have a strict transactional hedging policy that you carry those terms across this year. So that's basically the lag effect that we have. So when you take into account the guidance we have given you, the $0.01 for €1, that works well when you have gradual changes, but when you have relatively sudden changes like we've had over the last months, and especially between the end of last year and this year, you need to take into account a lag effect that plays.
Maybe as a follow-up, Filip, so that I understand correctly. So I understand that usually the lag effect is about 6 months. So would that imply that the positive currency environment that we've seen in 2015 would only start to apply for the second half of the results solely on the transactional side?
That depends on the contract mix and the duration of the contracts. But the principle that you mentioned is true, that obviously as we enter into new contracts this year at terms which are better in terms of Forex than, for example, those at the end of last year, you will see that coming through indeed in the next months.
And Mutlu, let me then address your questions regarding the underlying drivers for the guidance for the second half and the fact that second half should be a bit lower than the first half. This is not driven by caution. I mean, we are factoring in the forecast, everything we know today and that we see today. That includes, of course, the usual seasonality. I mean, it is there. It's been there for forever and continues to be there. So there is, in a number of businesses and regions, a shorter number of business days in the second half than in the first half. And with the summer vacation and the month of December having a significant impact on that. And secondly, we are also, while, as I mentioned, the demand, the underlying demand remains very supportive and strong in many areas, we have also factored in the lower price levels for secondary metals, the metals that cannot be hedged. So that's one of the elements to be taken into account with all other moving parts. So it's not a matter of caution. I would say it's a realistic view based on what we see today, based on what we know today, based on what we have in the order books, and what we can, I would say, calculate or estimate from the current trading conditions.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Philip.
Thank you, sir. We'll now go to Mr. Laurent Favre of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gents. Just one question on working capital left. So if I got that right, on the discontinued side, you had a working capital inflow of, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 million, and the core business was down at an outflow of, I don't know, 220, 230 million. I mean, if I look at metal prices, they actually corrected before the end of June. From the 1st of Jan to end of June, the basket is down, I don't know, something like 10%. Maybe for you a bit less, given hedging. So am I right that you haven't actually seen the full impact of that decline in your working capital? In other words, actually, with working capital now down, with metal prices down now another, 7 or 8%, you could actually have a significant inflow. Or are you actually saying that, it's all in that H1 number, and therefore in H2 you're aiming for zero working capital, so that the full year working capital, if we stay with current metal prices, could be down 220 to 30 million. I mean, it's a fairly big number, that's why I'm asking just to double check.
Yeah, indeed, it takes, I confirm your statement, it takes time to have that price effect filter through, indeed. Yeah.
Okay, so you could have an inflow in the second half, a significant inflow if things stay as they are today.
If you single out the metal price effect, yes, in theory, yes, because that will filter through the receivables by definition. Remains to be seen how volumes develop, and of course some working capital will be required to fill the pipeline of the new production lines and the new facilities. So
okay,
it's too early to provide, I would say, overall guidance. Suffice to say that if you single out the metal price effect, yes, it has yet to come through. Yeah.
Okay. And just on the discontinued side, I mean, can you tell us, I understand that you're running the business for cash at the moment, but do you see that you've got further improvements on this working capital to do, or would you say that as of end of the first half, this business is as cash efficient as it can be, or can we get another positive surprise there?
I would tend to agree with your statement. Obviously, again, it depends on the underlying business and metal prices, but I would say, indeed, don't expect a further improvement in working capital in that part of the business.
Okay. And as we get the balance sheet now for the discontinued, on the provision side, all I can see is something on pension. Am I right that there's nothing on this French litigation case in terms
That's
of provisioning?
Right.
That's yep. Right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you much, sir. We'll now go to Mr. Simon Pickling of Exane. Please go ahead.
Good morning, all. A couple left, please. On Catalysis, EBIT margin was strongly up, highest it's been in quite a while. I'm sure there is an impact of the new capacity ramping up, but I also did see in the historics, I think you've restated sales slightly lower last year. Has there been a change to the accounting treatment for precious metals, I wonder? And linked to that, the new double-digit EBIT margin, is that seen as sort of sustainable now that that capacity is fully ramped up, or even with upside from here. And then secondly as well, NMC you point to as being particularly strong as a cathode platform. Is that what you're seeing as currently being the preferred technology from the automotive industry? Those two. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, on the first one, I mean, the improvement in catalysis is based on business, not on accounting. So there's been no changes to the accounting rules, no.
And it's partly the ramp-up, as you indicated, Simon, and partly the mix, the product mix, as we mentioned in the release, that has been more supportive than in prior periods. And so it's the combination of the two effects that explains the margin improvement. It was an expected margin improvement. We had indicated that last year that margins would improve as we ramp up capacity and as the mix corrections have yet to take place. As far as NMC technology is concerned, the answer to your question is yes. We see that as being the preferred family of products being chosen by automotive manufacturers for their range of electrified vehicles, with one notable exception that we also discussed in the past is Tesla, which has chosen to go for NCA, nickel cobalt aluminum, high nickel actually compounds for their models. All other OEMs have chosen or are moving to NMCs for their electrification path. And this is one of the reasons we believe we are very well positioned to capture a decent share of the growth in that market.
Are you able to comment in NMC for portable electronics where you see your market position or market share?
Yes, because that's relatively straightforward because we are quasi out of that business of providing NMCs for portable electronics. Our focus in the portable electronics segment is almost exclusively on high-density lithium cobalt materials for the high-end applications. That's been the area in which we have the highest degree of technical differentiation and the highest degree of success in terms of market penetration.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you much, sir. We'll now go to Mr. Adam Collins, who's coming also with follow-up questions. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, just a couple left. Net debt stood at 0.6 of EBITDA. And the share price is roughly 10% below its historical peaks. We haven't seen any share repurchases for a little while. So I wondered if you could just sort of talk us through your thinking about restarting share repurchases, whether that's on the agenda for this year. And then the second one was just a point of clarification about the growth in the EM and surface chems area. I think in the first quarter you indicated that roughly half of the top line growth was relating to the two acquisitions and roughly half organic. Could you just give us an indication of what the organic growth component was for revenues and profits through the half? Just a rough idea. Thank you.
On the share buyback, of course, we've been in a closed period for a month now and without possibility to buy back shares, but I guess your question goes back to before the closed period or your it is likely that share buybacks will be resumed, indeed, for the reasons that you have indicated. And then the growth in energy and surface technologies is coming predominantly from organic volume. And the vast majority of the growth is coming from there. The impact of the recent acquisitions is much less than half of the total growth.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Collins. As we have no further questions, I turn the conference back over to Mr. Greenberg for any additional or closing remarks. Thank you.
Okay, so since there are no additional questions at this point in time, I would like to, of course, thank you for your participation in this call and maybe remind you some of the key messages and takeaways from the release of this morning, that we are very pleased with the evolution of revenues and earnings, which is very much in line with the indications we gave towards the end of last year, and in particular the fact, and we said at the time, that our recent growth investments project would start to contribute to the bottom line in meaningful proportions, and it is indeed pleasing to see that that has materialized and contributed to a significant earnings recovery. Under current conditions, and as we see continued underlying strength in demand in the majority, the vast majority of our businesses, we're able today to narrow down the forecast range and to upgrade it somewhat. And indeed, I'm confident that under current conditions, we should generate a recurring EBIT in the upper half of the range that was guided to previously. And last but not least, I would like to remind you one more time that our Capital Markets Day will take place on 2nd of September, and we look forward to seeing you there and have a lively interaction about the long-term strategy of Umicore and our key projects in that respect. In the meantime, of course, if you have follow-on questions regarding the first half results or the forecast or our growth projects, please feel free as usual to get in touch with our investor relations team. And at this point, I would like then to close the call and wish you a very pleasant day and weekend. Thank you and bye-bye.